imitated, never duplicated. This is the one and only Fash the Nation, your guiding light in a sea of degeneracy.
Episode 203 of Fash the Nation. I'm Jazz Hands McFeels, joined as always by my trusty co-host, Marcus Halberstam from Midweek Show. Hello, Marcus. How are you, sir?
Doing all right, man. Just soaking it all in here.
Yeah, there's quite a bit going on. Our coverage of Buttigieg and Biden was prescient last Sunday, because a lot of that has been exploding. We're going to get to that in the second half. And then, of course, the border crisis and everything else.
Yeah, I love when, the majority, the whatever, you know, handful of things that we really hang on are all the main stories until we do the next episode. That's how you know you nailed it.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, and then factor that in with the part one of Kushner, Inc., which has been very well received. Lots of people have been enjoying that, including Ann Coulter. Yeah, Coulter's been talking about Kushner quite a bit, but it's really making waves, and you know, we're going to be doing part two of Kushner Inc. this weekend, so look forward to that. We'll probably do that right out of the gate, unless there are any major developments otherwise. We certainly don't have to worry about Donald Trump closing down the border. Not like that's going to be superseding Kushner Inc. In fact, it'll be because of Kushner Inc. that won't happen. So.
Yeah. You know, you're very prescient in your sort of go-to line. I don't want to hear any more of Trump proposes, Trump threatens, Trump suggests, blah, blah, blah. You know, I was talking to two guys at work who voted for Donald Trump, you know, voicing my displeasure last week. And you know, the one guy's looking at something and he's like, oh, hey, look at this, you know, Trump right here, Trump's threatening to shut down the border. I was like, all right, dude, get back to me when it happens.
Yeah, it's like wait 24 hours and see what happens. And it's been, because it used to be wait 24 hours and see if, you know, he, because it's also true of the cucks, like Trump comes out and cucks on something and then uncucks. But like now it's sort of the reverse. It's just it's like threatens, considers, proposes, strokes his dick, and then it doesn't ever do anything. And that's happened with the border. It's happened with the border. It's happened with a bunch of stuff.
I mean, the whole thing of closing the border is like, I was like, I don't know if this is actually going to accomplish any objective, but you know, this outcry about, you know, my GDP and the billions of dollars in goods and services moving back and forth across the border, like that. I mean, that was also predictable. And I just it's like, if this is not going to accomplish anything, it was predictable in that, you know, it was going to be hot and heavy and that Trump probably would cave.
Oh, of course.
Over what? The whole thing seemed kind of like a misstep. I mean, it was music to my ears until I, you know, thought about it for like 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's music to every and to guys like you're talking about, you know, uninitiated Trump voters or casual observers of the media. They are actually dialed into it for a while, and then they may not necessarily see the headline that says Trump shifts on border shutdown treat. Trump takes step back from threat to close border. They don't see that. They, you know, intuitively, they know nothing really has changed. And that's the problem that Trump faces, is that he is very quickly, because a lot of these boomer MAGApedes, you know, I know a common refrain is that, oh, there's nothing that Trump could do to like get these people to jump ship. And it's like that. Nah, that's not true. That's not true, because the base will collapse as Trump sort of acts out. And follows through on more and more of these sort of these scenes, I guess, invoking deja vu in people's minds, voters' minds, that he is basically just doing the shtick that everyone else has done. Well, actually, it's kind of different, because there wouldn't be these threats. It's almost like it's more pronounced. Like, there wouldn't be these threats under a Romney or under a Jeb. Like, Jeb or Romney would never have closed the border. They would have just sort of let it happen and said, I can't, there's nothing I can do. See, with Trump, it's like he threatens with a really good solution that is probably unable to be executed. And then he cucks. He walks it back because he has no other choice. And he just looks like a fucking buffoon. But he doesn't have, he does have another choice, actually, as I'm like thinking this out loud. He could shut down the border. But shutting down the border is it's evidence that he cannot maintain control of the border with the military or some other means. Like, it's not that hard to come up with a system that lets trucks in and like legal people in. And I'm not talking about legal immigrants, but just the fucking day to day commerce. And keeps the illegal shitskins out.
People who are actually here, you know, in our country on business and are fucking, you know, going, their return trip is already plotted.
Right.
Be it, you know, today or tomorrow.
But if the only solution is to stop all of that, and by the way, like, I'm not making the argument for the Chamber of Commerce here or anybody else. Like, but if you have to stop.
It doesn't need to be all of one or all of the other.
It shows that you have no control over the border. It's a tacit admission that there's no control. There's no ability to adjudicate on the shitskins, the shitbirds, the belched detritus and actual commerce and normal. Yeah. It's just a joke. The whole thing's a fucking joke.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, this former director of ICE sort of alludes to it. This Sandwag guy talking about, you know, once they get their 2 feet on American soil, they file their asylum claim and, you know, the process just sort of goes from there. I mean, what I was wondering. It's like, what is the point? Like, if the border is, quote unquote, closed, are you released from your obligations under international law to deal with all this asylum shit?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
No. Well, and see, from the point of view of the border closure, it is what I'm saying it is, where it shows that you've already lost control. Trump is attempting to use it as an economic threat when just taxing remittances would do just fine. But he's not going to do that. Steve Mnuchin already talked him out of it, so he's not going to do it.
Yeah, it's funny that you should mention that. One of the two people who's on the short list of border czar or immigration czar, should that be something that actually happens, which it probably will not. That was one of his. He had a 3-point plan, and that was one of the three. That being Chris.
Chris Kobach had the. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. I thought you were winding up for like Steve Mnuchin is on the short list and that was his idea. Because I'm like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah. I mean, dude, at this point, why not? Why not have Steve Mnuchin be the immigration czar?
Well, at least you get along with Jared Kushner, right? Get along with Jared Kushner. I mean, what's the point of an immigration czar anyway? It's like, it's just somebody that's going to have to like fuck with Jared and Ivanka. It's like, good luck. I mean, it's like put this guy in charge. Not only will they have to fuck with Jared and Ivanka, they would have to get in between Jared and Ivanka and Christian Nielsen. It's like, you're appointing an immigration czar because you're too much of a pussy to fire Christian Nielsen. It's like, what is the workaround that you're trying to get done here? The whole purpose of appointing a czar is because you are appointing someone who you know won't get confirmed by Congress. Now, if it is Chris Kobach, which that was the concern that they couldn't get, passed by the Senate, then that's good. But that person's still going to have the final seal of approval of Jared Kushner and Christian Nielsen. It's like,
just imagine that job listing, you know, right? Like here's the wreck. Like, yeah, you get to come in and, you know, there'll be some pomp and circumstance and you can do, you know, some shit on the edges at the margins and pretend like you're doing something. But if you stumble onto something that actually starts working, my fuck up daughter and her Jew husband are going to shut you down. And
yeah, here, come join the Trump administration. You're going to be siloed under Jared Kushner, who fucking hates all Americans, considers them Nazis, and looks at every effort to get one over on them as retribution for the Holocaust. Yeah, that's who you're going to be working for. So don't actually like put forward any immigration policies that's going to be good for American Nazis, right? The way that Jared looks at this. Oh, come up with an idea that's profitable for Jared and his fucking companies. Come up with an idea that makes Donald Trump look good. All right, you got a fucking winner, but anything else and you're fucked.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, I mean, and not only in addition to the, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars, I guess, going each way, depending on how you're crunching the numbers. I've seen various figures, you know, of commerce that would be affected by a border closure. What people are really chimping out about is them avocados.
Ay, caramba.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Of course.
My yeah, what, avocado toast.
What would these oven middle class fucking schlubs in New York and L.A. do without their avocado toast? I mean, Jesus, the whole fucking world is going to come crashing down.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you're on a diet, they're like a good source of protein. Like I've seen people just like bust one out, you know, and like pit it and just sort of eat it right like that, more or less.
Oh, I like avocados, too, but I don't like avocados more than my culture. I don't like avocados more than, you know, the safety of my country. I don't like avocados more than my life, which is being put at stake by having these people close by, because I'd rather pay $5 or $20 for an avocado so that my wages don't go down by a single percentage point, so that some working class guy in Michigan. His wages don't go down or he gets worse. He just gets put out of a fucking job. So, yeah, avocado shortages. Oh, God.
Yeah. Avocados from Mexico. Every time I hear that little jingle and it's at the, it's always at the end of those commercials, it reminds me not to buy that. Now, if I'm, you know, get something, I'm out somewhere and it comes with you know, some guac. I'm not going to be like, take this away, but no, I'm not out there actively procuring it.
Well, it would make, you know, the procurement of Jeb's guacabole and its, you know, contents become a very bourgeois activity. If the border actually,
dude, I should have actually bought one of those.
they probably were pretty nice. I mean, I would think it's like $85, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. That was yeah, that would have been the sticking point. It's like how much of this is for the guac bowl and how much will be going to the subversion of America? I'm guessing about $65 for the subversion.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was one of those stone, though, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was fucking hollow. That would be poetic, wouldn't it? A hollow guac bowl for a hollow candidate. That's.
Yeah. Be like some sort of acrylic. Composite.
Yeah, they're supposed to be stone because you're supposed, it's like almost like a mortar and pestle. You're supposed to be able to like smash it in that thing. Just like
yeah.
Jeb's campaign got fucking smashed on the rocks.
Dude, that meme of him in the bathtub with the guac bowl on his head.
yeah.
Better times.
Better times. But those people haven't gone away. Don't worry. Don't fret. I got a whole boatload of quotes from senators on Donald Trump threatening to shut the border. Michael McCall. This one's actually pretty woke. He's sort of Michael McCall is now woke on the tweet cave repeat defeat meme. The president made that statement out of frustration, but I don't think he's actually going to shut down the border. Hey, you're probably right about that, Michael. What a prediction. John Cornyn, I understand the president's frustration, but the unintended consequences of that, I think, would be bad for everybody. No, it'd just be bad for Shlomo. Good for everybody else. That's what you meant by that, John. And then Marco Rubio. What do you mean? Shut it down. What do you mean?
I think you know perfectly well what that means, little Marco. I mean, yeah, you know, it's like if I'm the president, I'm like, okay, if I can't stop these people, you know, because our laws are so subverted, how that came to be is another parable for another time. These countries have got to start feeling some pain, you know. However, even in that arena, there's only so much I can do. So, like, I'm going to do what I can. If you don't like what I'm doing, offer some better ideas. You know, let's get something going on remittances. I mean, it's the pressure does need to be applied, but you know, this was it was just a bad proposal, and it was him just like shooting off, basically.
It's arm flailing. It's arm flailing because he's already been boxed in on remittances. Remittances is how you apply the economic pressure that he's attempting to apply by shutting down the border. And in fact, cutting or taxing remittances actually only hurts the Mexicans. It really doesn't hurt us. It only hurts them. Whereas shutting down the border, it does, like, if we're honest in our analysis, it does affect U.S. commerce and trade. But I did like whatever, who was it? Some GOP senator, this guy finally, somebody said something spicy, saying that every town is a border town until Trump closes the southern border.
Dude, that was Marsha Blackburn.
Wow. Wow. Well.
Yeah. So I'm glad she's already fucking so much better in the GOP Senate than most of those guys, as I figured she would be.
Yeah. Well, she's in the Senate seat, too. So, you know, for her to say this, somebody could say, ah, well, she's just running for re-election. Not now. She's got 6 years. So, yeah. So this is the way people have to think. Every town is a border town until this problem is resolved. I mean, it literally is when you have Greyhound busing these fucking people all over the country. Every town is a border town in the current year.
the rapid beaner delivery system, interstate.
Yeah. They might as well just change the colors on the truck from red, white and blue and the dog to being like a chihuahua or a rooster. You know, they love these people love doing cockfights in big Mexican flag. I mean,
the rooster.
Yeah. Just have a rooster. It's called not Greyhound, rooster. It's like El Rooster Rapido.
Yeah. I mean, certainly there's the administration could be doing more, but you know, these sort of normie GOP voters and all these folks out there in MAGA country, it's like, yeah, you know, he would have to go, you know, and these things would be considered extra legal. But the reality is, you know, under normal operating conditions, the laws of the United States, you know, and our judicial system have been so subverted that, you know, the law says that you have to, you know, sit here and allow your country to be invaded. Like, sit there and just contemplate that for a second and then start contemplating. You know, who does that sort of shit in their own self-interest?
Well, that's what when I see Marco Rubio say, what do you mean shut it down? What do you mean? What do you mean? It's like shutting it down means it's shut down. But Trump isn't going to do it. But just the reaction is worth its weight in gold. I saw the Chamber of Commerce. Weighed in on Monday, urging the administration to consider the cost to domestic exporters. The leading business organization said that it shared the administration's concern that a, quote, massive influx of migrants, but said, I'm sure they shared that concern. They're just concerned that they're not being delivered like to the doorsteps of all the businesses that they want to employ them at. That's their concern. But said that best response for Congress is to attempt a broader overhaul of immigration. Shut the fuck up, Chamber of Commerce. Quote, even threatening
a broader overhaul. You know, I mean, that is always the solution. It's like illegal immigrant. You know, Jorge Ramos was basically he you know, went on this diatribe about how. You know, the laws, there's really nothing you can do. Like, you just kind of have to let them in. And, you know, there's a lot of truth there. But just to think about, like, how did it even come to be this way? But it's all. Yep. So, yeah, Jorge Ramos's point and all these other people, you know, what I was getting to, it's like, oh, yeah, illegal immigration is bad. These illegal immigration numbers are really high. We had to get those down by making more immigration legal and the illegal people that are here legal. Boom. Problem solved.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to solve it all at once.
there does need to be a solution.
Well, and I think that's what we don't want to skip ahead to that yet. We got a couple segues to get to before that. That's what they're working on quietly behind the scenes. We'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah. So the from the AP sources Trump considers adding immigration czar. Now, the two names that were out there are of Kris Kobach, obviously, who I was talking about, and the former attorney general of Virginia, who lost the governorship to Terry McAuliffe.
Ken Cuccinelli.
Yes, it is Ken Cuccinelli. I mean, I don't remember him being particularly strong on immigration. I just remember him being not a bitch on immigration. But, you know, most of the time he was not found talking about immigration because he was LARPing about abortion to the point that it just was like embarrassing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he and there have been some things that he has said recently that have made me, you know, that just realize that it's all a fucking, you know, like him and Dave Brat. And he's one of the original Tea Party conservatives. And he has not been the way that, you know, that Ken Cuccinelli is essentially a fucking fraud, a wolf in sheep's clothing is. He's actually a sheep in wolf's clothing. It's the way that it works. He's a sheep in wolf's clothing because he's a cuck. He's a pussy, but he presents as someone who's going to be hardcore. But the tell on this is Ken Cuccinelli isn't an outspoken supporter of the Trump administration. He's sort of just one of these guys that's biding his time, sitting on the sidelines. Kobach has been a passionate supporter of Trump's administration to the point where Kobach is still like plan trusting. I saw that he did an interview recently where he was still shilling for the immigrations, you know, something, right? Well, because he's vying for a job. It's like, okay, we get it, Chris. But Cuccinelli hasn't been doing that at all. And that's the tell, is that you can see that he's, you know, he's not really, his heart's not in it. And he wants to be able to say, you know, sort of brandish his, well, I was never for that bona fides at some later date. But
yeah, it's like, well, Ken, you're never going to be governor of Virginia, A, because you're a bad candidate, but B, mostly because of the demographic situation in the old Dominion, the former capital of the Confederacy. It's pretty rough. Anyway, on to the other individual being proposed as immigration czar, Kris Kobach. He was on with Lou Dobbs, who's been doing some very solid work these days. He had some interesting things to say, mostly in terms of his 3-point plan to deal with this and his commentary on what the administration has been doing and not doing was interesting as well.
Oh, good.
Number one, publish the Flores settlement regulation. This would be a regulation that ends the Flores settlement, right, and defines how we can detain entire families together. And they could have done that back in December. I don't know why they haven't done it yet, but that should be done immediately. Then that will stop the caravans from using children as get out of jail free cards.
Could I proffer
the incentive to bring them?
Could I proffer a possible answer? Because Kirsten Nielsen's working for the Chamber of Commerce and the Business Roundtable rather than for the President of the United States.
Well, I won't speculate on why they haven't done it, but it would be an easy step to do.
It was a pretty long pause.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to step Lou Dobbs' pile of shit that he put out there for him to step in. Although Lou Dobbs is totally not wrong. Lou Dobbs not wrong. In fact, Lou Dobbs is 100% correct. But, you know, Kobach's got to be very careful about, because Kobach was being considered for DHS secretary for a while. And, you know, he doesn't want to mar that up. You always have to be.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I would have been floored if he had said anything other than exactly what he said.
Oh, I'm sure the pause I take as agreement. yeah, it's good that this could happen. I mean, my position now, so much has become clear of late. It's like, I don't really know what that's going to do. I mean, Trump is supposed to be the immigration czar.
Point number three in Kobach's 3-point plan was remittances. But I think this is the one that's probably going to get most of the attention if any of it does.
and create processing towns that are confined. And so when someone comes in and falsely claims asylum, we don't release them for 6 months onto the streets of the United States. We process them right there in that camp where they have the three square meals, they're living in a nice mobile home, and then as soon as they're done, as soon as the claim is rejected, they're on the next plane back home. And then the people back home suddenly realize, hey, he just left here 2 weeks ago and yet he's back. Maybe going in these caravans isn't such a great deal anymore. So let's process the claims right there and at the border and not release these people into the United States where they just disappear.
Sounds good, fam. Sounds great. I mean, that's what Remain in Mexico was supposed to be all about. Processing the claims in Mexico puts a whole different edge on what happens with them than when they're processed.
I don't know what side of the border exactly he's talking about, though. That was sort of unclear to me. I could just see the headlines, though, you know. Oh, God, these processing towns. It's like,
Of course, it just goes
from there.
Of course, they're going to say that. They got a really good thing. Shlomo has a really good thing going with these caravans and the whole system being set up in the way that it is. Any reversal of that in any manner is going to be tantamount to another Holocaust.
Yeah, no. How the civil rights movement was so useful in fucking up so much shit, you know, beyond just like making sure there's blacks everywhere and that you are forced by the government to deal with them. It's sort of a general application. Like anytime you're looking to like corral and confine a large group of people who are fucking your shit up, it's going to be bad optics.
Yeah. Well, and this is, you know, Trump, of course, under the pressure of all these senators and McConnell, you know, saying closing the border would have a catastrophic impact. Rob Portman, senator from Ohio. And then, of course, then Trump cucked, essentially. Nobody's surprised by this. This is not a shock to anybody on this program. But last week when he made the first threat and he was like, I'm going to close the border next week. And then now here we are next week. And he's telling people that he will shut the border if he cannot reach a deal with Congress to pass stricter immigration laws. A retreat of sorts from his threat last Friday to close all or part of the frontier unless Mexico stops migrants from crossing. The president offered a vague answer when asked if he intends to close the border, saying, I haven't made that intention known, and I'm ready to close it if I have to close it. Just fucking smell the pussy from here. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then, you know, you have the aid being cut to, you know, to these Central American shitholes.
That was another thing,
which
that was another fucking outcry from this whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's something that the administration could do pretty easily. And I think, you know, obviously there's always going to be lawsuits, but I think they would be hard pressed to actually stop them. But hey, you never know. But, you know, the outcry, the straight up chimping out over that was quick, fast and in a hurry. You know, everyone's saying it's going, you know, not sending all these shithole countries. You know, all of our money is going to make the migrant surge situation worse. You know, and that's like. Technically, that's probably a true statement. But if you're like if you actually are looking at things that way, like your civilization is fucking over.
Yeah, well, and it's just so embarrassing the way that this is sort of turning out, of course, for Trump. I mean, he says if we don't make a deal with Congress, the border is going to be closed 100%. So he shifted the goalpost to yet again. Trying to pivot to Congress instead of taking action himself. It's makes big threat, caves on threat, then more, you know, just shake the fucking like shake it around for a while, which is what he's going to do. And then there's not going to be a deal and there's not going to be a border closure. So there's nothing that's coming out of it. And of course, this is all by design because he's pivoting to this immigration deal that Jared Kushner has been working on. That's what this is all about. he has to react to the abject crisis that's going on down at the border with some big grand Donald Trump threat of I'm going to close the whole border. He gets the reaction from Congress and then he says, all right, well, work with me, Congress. This is all a setup to try to parlay this wonderful package that Jared Kushner has been working on, isn't it? I mean, that's what this is all about. That's what the healthcare thing was about, too, by the way. We'll get to that later.
Yeah. Before we get back into Mr. Kushner, I saw this on Politico today. I mean, actually yesterday, I think I saw it today, but yeah, a lot of stuff has been happening just in the last couple of days. Yeah. He has the Democrats in Congress, running so scared on the issue of him potentially closing the border that, in the House, they're meeting about scheduling a vote, something that they really want to do. Apparently they discussed the measure in Nancy's office last night, and Benny Thompson wants to he's saying this notion that we can close the border is just stupid. Thompson said the notion that because he's throwing a hissy fit because he can't get his way that he's going to put the entire economics of the United States in peril just doesn't make sense. Well, if you look at Benny Thompson, you can see that he's actually what's stupid here. But they're like, OK, Mr. President, that shows you that you really got him on their heels here.
Yeah. And the whole thing has just been the whole thing has just been a total disaster from start to finish. And everybody knew that this was coming. I mean, everybody knew that Trump's inaction on the border was going to lead, like we were talking about this weekend, was going to lead to an ever increasing flow of third world detritus across the border. And here it is. You are here now, as goes the poll meme. Like, you are here now. Border crisis on par with Europe is now underway in summer of 2019. That's what's happening right now. And Donald isn't doing anything about it.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, the let's just try to ignore it strategy is definitely out. That was made clear Sunday. I was actually watched a little bit of Meet the Press. And, Chuck Todd was saying, it is a crisis. He even, I believe, used language about these migrants and asylum seekers as quote unquote gaming the system, if I recall that correctly. So just try to pretend it's not a crisis. That was totally the strategy they were going with is out the window. Like, it just couldn't be ignored any longer. And now it's politically advantageous because, Trump is fucking being a buffoon. And that's why, you see all these articles, in the wake of Meet the Press over the course of the week about how, there is a crisis, but it's Trump's fault somehow. Now, once again, there is some truth to that. A case can be made that is true, but that's not, these people are not arguing in that line.
I mean, the lying Jew media is not wrong here. It is true. It is true. And I'm glad they're carrying water for this narrative because they are actually positing it into people's heads that, yes, like Trump's inaction on this is leading to this crisis. This is, but they're, they're framing it in a different way. They're sort of saying, other reasons are the cause. And of course, Mexico is not fazed by Donald Trump's threats. I saw on the Hill, Mexico won't block caravans from entering through Guatemala. So they're not going to stop it. They could easily close down that bottleneck. They're not doing it.
I was thinking about this today. We need to figure out a way to get the neocons to start shilling for war with Mexico. Like, if we just went to war with Mexico, which is easy. We all remember how easy it is. Like, all these problems could be solved.
Oh, well,
all these pesky laws and asylum claims and international law and all that bullshit, that's right out the window.
Well, yeah, I made this point sort of in a LARPy way on a very early episode of Fash the Nation, which is that you just do Manifest Destiny all the way down to the Isthmus of Panama and build a wall there. You're talking about, what, 50, 70 miles of wall? Build it like 2 miles high. Call it a fucking day. I mean, it's impassable anyway. You got to take a ferry to go from across. You can't just drive across down there anyway. So it's like, why not do that? And then push all these people below the equator and you're done.
Yeah. And then take over Mexico. Be like, look, we're not even going to disrupt things very much. You obviously have a totally functioning like white at the top caste system. So that's cool. We can keep that in place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fucking mess. But yeah, I don't even, dude, I'm an all or nothing sort of person. I wouldn't even want like that shit stain thing connected to us. Like, I just want all of those people out, gone into the South America. Like, we'll keep the white caste system. They can just repopulate the countries there.
It's like, it's like, oh, we just need to send them more money. We need to send them more money. We need to send them more money. It's like, no, I mean, really, like, if you really want these people to be successful, what you want is for fucking white people to be like lording over them, because that's about the only fucking chance they have. This is well established
to have a nice life. Yeah, it is. There's no other choice. And that's the thing, is like even the threat of cutting off funding to these countries was met with total opposition. Key Republicans joined Democrats in imposing Trump on Central American fund. It's like, this is not solving the problem. Like, you can make the argument that, oh, the aid is going to pay off, all the various entities, but you can't pay them off at a level that solves the problem. And even if you do, it doesn't stop them from coming, because these people don't have an interest in stopping their own people from leaving. They want the garbage to leave. There's a huge industry predicated on the trafficking. They're not going to shut that down. And what amount of money would you? They're going to take the money and keep profiting from it. There's no world in which they take the money and then shut down that industry. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, no. Send us $50 million and you'll receive a token amount, fewer migrants. I was reading on Anglin's site, he is sort of boiling it all the way down, in a thought-provoking article. At the end of the day, this is really just a fucking like alley mugging.
Yeah, that's all it really is. So the pivot here to this immigration bill that they're trying to put together. I think we've covered everything else with the closing of the border and the border crisis and what all this has predicated, which is that Trump is now delivering this ultimatum to Congress: immigration deal or border closure. And he thinks that now this crisis that everybody is now admitting is a problem is going to this time lead to a deal where Congress is going to vote. Not only do you not have the Republican control of the House anymore, you have the House that is not, what do you think they're going to give Donald anything that he
wants?
Didn't
Trump himself already say that there's no point in even fucking talking about a deal until DACA is declared unconstitutional? Yeah. I seem to recall things sort of being left that way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And and so, like, what sort of a deal does he think he's going to get right now? I mean, he knows, like, everybody knows that these people are just going to wait him out. Even if it becomes clear that he's going to, Mr. Magoo his way into a second term, they're not going to work with him on this. And I mean, they don't care what happens at the border. They're just going to allow the crisis to happen and complain about the humanitarian issues, quote unquote, and then blame them on Trump when they occur. They don't have any interest in slowing down the flow of the detritus at all. None. So any idea that Trump is under these circumstances or under any future set of circumstances is going to get some sort of immigration deal. But the plan for Trump, of course, because Jared Kushner is working on this behind the scenes and has been since January, is to sell everyone a giant shit sandwich and call it comprehensive immigration reform. Big win
for everybody. The ever-elusive grand bargain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got to bring in somebody who has experiences with bargains, even though I don't think Kushner really fucking does, because he's a bullshit Jew.
Yeah. No, he's a really, really, really bad. Yeah, that's the thing, is like it all of this sort of makes the DACA for, what was the trade? DACA for 50 billion, DACA for $25 billion of wall, and a bunch of like immigrants, it makes that deal almost seem enticing compared to what we're about, that's about to get jammed down our throats with Jared.
Yeah. Yeah, this is this Politico article is pretty black pilling. The only sort of bright spot is that supposedly Stephen Miller, the hardliner on immigration, while he has not attended most of Kushner's the meetings of his little working group, he must sign off on any plan before, according to this, before Trump does. Now, I would prefer that to say before it even goes to Trump, but I would assume that that is not the case.
No, no. So, yes, Stephen Miller is in the meetings. But like this, it doesn't matter like what comes out of this meeting. It could be the 70 point immigration plan that Trump started off with. That is not going to get through a House of Representatives, and neither is any sort of tepid trade on amnesty for something, because that's what Trump is going for. Ultimately, that's what Jared Kushner is going for. And in fact, what Jared Kushner is going for is amnesty in exchange for something that he can sell to his father-in-law as a win, but ultimately not really deliver anything. In fact, in the long run will be a detriment to the Goyim, because that's who he's against. I mean, that's exactly what it's going to be. Now, will Stephen Miller be the gatekeeper on that? Maybe. And the whole thing is going to blow up. That could be that would be the best thing possible that could happen. Just like Jussie Smollett getting off was a white pill, this immigration deal blowing up, Jared Kushner failing, and the border crisis getting worse is the only good outcome here. That's the only good one.
Oh, man, I was just thinking of a pretty good troll. You could come out and be like, all right, so it seems to have been this way for years at this static number. Everyone, particularly those on the left, are in agreement that there are 11 million illegal immigrants in the United States. So here's what I propose. You can have amnesty for 11 million people. 11 million and one, and everyone beyond that is deported immediately. Seems like the deal of a lifetime. You ought to take it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're not entertaining any level of amnesty. And that's why that deal that was first proposed way back when on DACA.
But the Democrats wouldn't take that deal either.
No,
they couldn't possibly.
No, because these people are not going to be deported under any circumstance. And the Supreme Court so far hasn't responded to any of the demands for an expedited ruling on DACA. So they just have to wait Trump out. Even if it is 6 years, they'll just wait him out, because they're going to with this border crisis, they are replenishing and increasing the numbers of illegals that are in the country by 1.5 million this year. I mean, look at the trajectory for them. This is nothing but good news. 1.5 times six. That's 9 million more illegal shitskins between now and when the maximum period of time at which Trump could be president. They're just going to keep doing this. And they might even be gunning for 2 million a year by next year.
Well, the one potential white pill is that if this keeps up,
there's one
anywhere near this level.
Huh? There's what? There's one? There's one at all.
Yeah. I see no reason for it to be abating, certainly not because of anything the president's doing. But, whether Trump's sort of flubbing this shit or not, I don't see how this is not the central issue in the 2020 election.
Yeah. Well, as much as they don't want it to be, it's going to have to be. I mean, that's why, remember a couple of weeks ago with Ron McDaniel saying 2020 is going to be about freedom versus socialism or something gay like that. Liberty versus social. Just who knows? The GOP doesn't want the number one issue to be immigration, but it still is.
But you don't want socialism. You don't want a fucking House of Representatives full of AOCs. Well, I mean, how do you think she got here? It's like, once again, Joe, what's his nuts? That district was literally Joe Crowley. That district was literally browned out from under him. And you had this like, you know, white sort of Joe Biden ish Democrat. Every sort of facet of this is encapsulated in the results of that one House race, which is why AOC is so great. I want her on television every day. I don't want her out of Washington. You know, I was telling some other normie about this. It's like, no. AOC is good where she is. She's basically doing my bidding. Don't worry about that. She needs to stay there.
She makes Nancy Pelosi look like a saint. AOC. She makes Nancy Pelosi, because Nancy Pelosi was at one point the extremist in the Democratic side. Not anymore. Nancy Pelosi is transparently a cuck. She's part of the establishment. She always was.
Pelosi is like an optics cuck now.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she didn't have to cuck on optics before. She could say all those things and not have to deliver on them, but there was nobody to keep her in check. Now there's AOC. Now there's Ilhan Omar. Now there's Rashida Tlaib. And I want more of those people. I do. I know it sounds crazy. I know it sounds backwards, but in the current state that we're in, with nobody on the other side to defend our values, this is the trajectory.
Can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. I mean, that's, you know, that goes without saying at this point.
Let the Jews build their golem. You know what I mean? Let them build it, because it's going to fucking destroy everything. And they have even recognized that this is happening. Like, they've had a lot of these conversations over the past couple months, especially with Ilhan Omar. The bulb, Congress bulb.
Yeah, my favorite Congress bulb. I think I stole that from Mr. Anglin, too. Yeah. It's kind of lowbrow, but.
Oh, it's good.
Fuck if it doesn't work.
Oh, it fucking works. So Jared Kushner has been working on this immigration plan behind the scenes. You know, it's gotten a lot of pushback. FAIR is on it. You have the Center for Immigration Studies going against this. And, this has been a hyper focus. So here is another round of immigration with Congress that's going to fail. That's not going to work. And Trump can say, at least I tried. And then the problem gets worse. And at least I tried. And the problem gets worse. But the funny thing about this, just to illustrate and underscore the total disarray that the White House is in right now, is last week we were talking about healthcare. Oh, Trump was like going down the whole, like he was gearing up the whole fucking works for like repeal and replace Obamacare. We're going to do, you know, we're going to get rid of this thing. Like this, more of this, like, you know, just.
We're the, like, party of great healthcare.
Yeah, it's like, bro, the fucking border is blowing the fuck up. Donald, this underscores a bunch of things. Number one, it underscores how removed Donald Trump is from everyday issues. It underscores how insulated he is. Now, this is not excuse making for Donald Trump. It's how he always has been. He doesn't really viscerally understand a lot of these issues. He has the ability as a showman to communicate to the base. He has the ability to relate to ordinary people with ordinary issues.
That was like Bill Clinton's. That was his claim to fame. His ability to get up there and do the "I feel your pain."
Oh yeah, yeah. And if Donald Trump or Bill Clinton didn't have that talent, they wouldn't have been elected. They wouldn't have been able to do it. Because look at Jeb Bush. He doesn't have that fucking talent. Look at Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is like the epitome of not having that talent. And
yeah, comically so.
Yeah. And it's hilarious. But like they tried to pivot on healthcare. They tried to pivot on healthcare. And we're going
to
be talking.
He just didn't want to talk about immigration. And literally everyone else is like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, that was part of it. It's also being driven and influenced by Jared as well. We're going to be talking about this weekend. But Josh Kushner, founder of Oscar Health, which is a $2.7 billion health company, they don't want to do repeal. They want to do repeal and replace. Remember, Donald Trump's effort was repeal Obamacare, not replace it. It became repeal and replace because of Jared and his brother Josh. Jared has, yeah, by the
first way, it was like the skinny repeal, you know, whatever that meant.
Right. But Oscar Health Company would face catastrophic financial consequences If they just repealed Obamacare and didn't replace. So Jared and Josh are like, you know, the whole play here is to have them at the center of redesigning whatever the health care is going to be, a market solution that benefits them and benefits the GOPE that Trump can sell as Trump care, the best health care you've ever seen in your life. And to a certain extent, I think McConnell probably knows this by now. Everybody knows this by now. If I know it, then he knows it. They don't want like the Kushners involved in designing health care. The fact that this was being pushed in the White House, little preview for this weekend. The fact that this was being pushed in the White House, Josh Kushner's phone calls to Gary Cohn were starting to become very uncomfortable because he's like, yeah, let me get in on that health care. Let me get in on that redesign. What's going on? What's happening? What's going on? Like, and it made people uncomfortable. And Jared was pushing for it, too. And now Jared and Josh, by the way, have a partnership, a sort of a silent partnership. This was an idea from Charles, essentially, so that the brothers wouldn't fight in the way that Murray and Charlie did. But it's like a silent partnership where they share like 50% of the profits and everything. It's a line item on Kushner's disclosures. It's like brothers first, partners first or something. It's like BF something, whatever. And it's basically this silent partnership where they share the interests and everything. So even though Jared's name is not on Oscar Health at all, he shares in the financial benefits of it. So that's just a little bit of a taste. And, you know, cause this, you wonder, well, like, why is Donald pivoting to healthcare? Why is he doing this? And the easy reaction is he doesn't want to talk about the failure of immigration, his own failure. And it's becoming a fucking problem. But it's also because when you see that, you have to look through like Orange Man's head and see like Jared Kushner fucking yanking the levers of Donald Trump. And that's essentially what's going on.
I'm glad you didn't use the old pulling the strings canard. That oh, God.
I tried to step around it the best I could.
Oh, man. And dude, now I wonder if Jared's going to catch any heat for basically walking Donald Trump into getting fucking bitch slapped by the Senate majority leader of his own party. Like, that's when I saw that quote from Mitch McConnell on Sunday. Like, oh, there's only one way. I laughed out loud. I look forward to seeing what the president is proposing and what he can work out with the House Democrats. I was just like, wow.
Yeah. Well, because all these attempts at healthcare repeal and then it became replaced. That was all Jared Kushner too, because he's been angling for this the whole time. And this is another run at it. The immigration thing is like him trying to brush up his bona fides with these people. But like Jared Kushner was holding secret meetings with Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin in the White House from the beginning of the administration on immigration. They've been working on jamming this lots of legal immigrants, fucking give DACA amnesty. That's been the thrust for 2 years. This didn't just start in January. It only got restarted in January. It's like, it's a new year, gentlemen. Let's fucking take another crack at this shit is what it was. And they're doing it again with healthcare, too.
Yeah, but now it's
it blew up in their face so big.
Yeah. It will truly be great healthcare after 2020.
Well,
the vote will be taken right after the election when Republicans hold the Senate and win back the House. It will be truly great healthcare that will work for America. And then he says, I was never planning a vote prior to the 2020 election on the wonderful healthcare package that some very talented people are now developing for me in the Republican Party.
This is how Donald Trump is always winning. I wasn't planning to actually do this. I wasn't, you know, it's like.
It will be on full display during the election as a much better and less expensive alternative to Obamacare. This will be a great campaign issue. I never asked Mitch McConnell for a vote before the election, as has been incorrectly reported in, you know, as usual in the New York Times. Those are sort of like inferred in the quote here, but only after the election when we take back the House, blah, 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 blah. Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney told CNN Sunday, apparently on State of the Union, that they would pass a new plan to replace the Affordable Care Act over the course of the next couple of months. So, yeah,
of course, next couple of months.
Dude, Mitch McConnell was just like, we're not doing that.
No,
because it just makes no sense. I mean, this is not just Mitch McConnell. Like this would have upended, congressional elections to have that. It just from their point of view on this, it's like such a bad idea. And you don't want congressional leaders getting in front of the president, but this was the president fucking up, trying to obfuscate his own failures and also do Jared Kushner's bidding, getting out in front of his entire congressional representation.
Well, this is also, it's not just bad that Jared Kushner has all these problems and Charles is really, manning the helm of this whole thing. And it's just going off the rails in such a bad way. Donald Trump is old. Donald Trump is tired. Yes, Donald Trump wakes up every morning and drinks, his like 16 ounce of V8 juice and whatever. But he eats tons of carbs and just guzzles fast food. And Donald Trump is tired. Donald Trump is old. Donald Trump is delegating. That's why he's looking for an immigration czar now. He's like looking for an excuse, because then, and I didn't even think of this until just now, he can blame the immigration czar. He can blame them when the shit fucks up. Just like, it's like, yeah. And Jared, I'm sure, is getting the beating of a lifetime by Donald behind the scenes over this healthcare thing. And he does. They say in the book Kushner Inc. multiple times, like, Trump has gone ballistic on Jared. But like the next day, it's just like nothing ever happens. It's just like, it's just nothing ever happens.
It reminds me of a passage from that one book. The next day, it's like nothing ever happened.
Yeah, just nothing ever happened. So the healthcare thing, it's just I was never planning on healthcare vote prior to 2020. It's like, well, then what were you doing, dude? Like, what were you doing? And all the time wasted on healthcare after taxes? Because remember, it was I don't remember the exact chronological order, but I want to say taxes were first. Taxes were first. And then it was pivot to healthcare. It's like, no, you should have pivoted to immigration. Immigration should have been first, but he didn't.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you once again, Paul Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
And also Donald Trump. I mean, it's none of these immense failures are possible, but, Paul Ryan does. Because, Trump did want to get it done. Like he knew it was unwise, but he trusted Paul Ryan. That's like mistake number one in any plan that's going to be your undoing. But then not forcing the issue. He should have not trusted Paul Ryan and been like, look, dude, this is how it's going. I just won the presidency against all odds. I speak for the base of the GOP. You do not. I don't care if you're retiring. I will fuck your shit up. So bigly.
Yeah, but he didn't. He won't even name Paul Ryan by name. Like he's too afraid to go after these people because he's afraid that the GOP will abandon ship along with their funding. Because, oh, God, if Donald Trump had to pay for his own campaign, where would we be? He's got to have somebody else foot the bill for it. So he goes along to get along.
Going to his supporters for donations like Andrew Yang probably is no longer a viable model for the Don at this point.
No, I'm sure. Well, I'm sure there are people who'd give money, but not in the way that it happened. It happened before. I forget there's something that was like right at the forefront of my mind about this.
I bought a hat from the official source. Beyond that, I never actually donated any money. I realized that the other day and cracked a smile over it.
Yeah, I don't remember. I feel like I did donate once and bought a hat. I just don't remember. I just do not remember. I remember being on the campaign webpage, but I think it was just to buy a hat. I think it was to do, but I don't know. I feel like I donated.
But a certain portion of that was a donation, correct? Like, even though it was made in the USA, you know, and it wasn't made in Indonesia for, you know, $1.75 and then sold for $25.
Yeah, but
I think some portion of it still went to the campaign.
It does. But I feel like there was a separate transaction where I must have given him like $100 or so. I don't remember. But whatever. He doesn't want to take money out of his own pocket. He doesn't need money out of my pocket. So fuck that guy. You know, so that's kind of where we are. I think that's a pretty full first half. Do you have anything else before we go to VorTrekker?
No, sounds good.
All right. Well, without further ado, we got VorTrekker Report with Kane of Adam. We'll be right back on Fash the Nation with 2020 Democrats and Joe Biden.
Listening to the show that changed your weekend forever. Fash the Nation. Fash the Nation.
Poor Fash the Nation, not shadow banned yet. I'm Kane of Adam, and this is the VorTrekker Report, covering the slaughter and persecution of white farmers and whites in general in South Africa. Let's start off with some attacks and then get into the news. The South African Police Service in Kirkwood have launched a manhunt for three suspects who allegedly attacked a couple and their son on their farm in Dunbrody, Kirkwood, on the 24th of March. According to the police information, the family was at home when an unknown male entered the house. The 51-year-old father and his son allegedly managed to overpower the suspect. Suddenly, two more suspects entered the house. One started stabbing the 51-year-old father in the back. The father and son released the suspect and the threesome ran away from the scene. The man was rushed to a local hospital later, but succumbed to his injuries. On Friday, the 22nd of March, in Chartwell Agricultural Holdings, Hotang, just after 9:06, the power went off due to load shedding. Three young boys aged 13, 15, and 18 years old were watching TV inside their cottage. When the power went out, they decided to walk about 10 meters to another cottage where one of the other boys was staying on the property. As the three reached the outside of the cottage, two armed and aggressive suspects appeared in the dark and opened fire at the three boys. The 18-year-old was struck in the upper body. The three turned around and ran back inside to the cottage while the suspect fired more shots at them. The mother of one of the boys came running out and the suspects also fired in her direction. The kids ran to the main house through a small gate, as did the mother. They fired a shot through the glass door leading into the house. The suspects ran directly to the room where the boys watched TV and ripped the flat screen from the wall bracket. They also took the gaming console, games, as well as other valuables and fled. Before they fled, they also shot into the wall above the bed. Gamers really are the most depressed. On to the news. Stuart Angnew, a member of the European Parliament, traveled to South Africa to report on the situation to the EU ambassador, studying the situation regarding rolling blackouts, farm murders, and toxic anti-white discrimination. He suggested to the ambassador that funds be diverted from South Africa, which the EU gives 50 million euros per year in aid. He was also given the same ANC party line that there are a lot of murders, sure, and most of the victims are black. Therefore, the targeted white minority are not of concern. The South African Human Rights Commission says controversial comments made by members of the EFF and party leader Julius Malema do not constitute hate speech. Comments made by Julius Malema, such as, "We are not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now," and popular EFF rally slogans such as, "Kill the Boer," "One Settler, One Bullet," and "Kill the Whites, Kill the Racists." The commission found Juju and the EFF's comments did not amount to hate speech or racism, and does not have a psychological impact on white Afrikaners. So basically, you're allowed to practically call for the death of white people, but it isn't hate speech because they didn't give you the country to ruin earlier. South African Jewish comedian and editor for The Citizen, Daniel Friedman, has called for the mass slaughter of everyone on the white right. He says they can be killed one by one or in a kind of group thing. His comments were made during the Ahmed Kathrad Foundation debates, Rise of Right-Wing Racism, on the state-owned media entity SABC, the South African Broadcasting Corporation. Take a listen.
Number one, my suggestion is we could kill them all. so we could kill everyone on the white right. So we could either do it one by one or in a kind of group thing.
Black First Land First has stated that the cyclone idea, which wreaked havoc in Mumbazawabababla, was not a natural disaster, but rather a consequence of the polluting waves of the West. The South African government has put forward a bill that, if signed into law, would allow them to censor the internet pretty much at whim. Under this bill, ostensibly proposed to curb the release of illicit materials such as revenge porn and other classified or sensitive content, anyone who uploads anything anywhere on the internet is a distributor, quote-unquote, of film. The intentionally vague wording of the bill would pretty much let the South African government lock up people who post things they don't like online at their own discretion. Channels like William Petzer, Afroform, The Kaplander, websites like HistoryReview.com, and other white South Africans who speak out all over the world like my researcher not shadow banned yet could theoretically be at risk of jail time, which, for white men in South Africa accused of being racist haters, is an HIV-injected death sentence. We will continue to stand strong with our white brothers and sisters in South Africa. We won't forget, nor ignore you. This week, we sourced our stories from SouthAfricaToday.net, LATimes.com, TimesLive.co.za, and TheSouthAfrican.com. I'd like to thank my friend, not shadow banned yet. This has been the 4-Trekker Report, heard only on Fash the Nation on TheWhiteStuff.biz.
And now, back to Fash the Nation, heard only on the TRS Radio Network.
And we are back. Thanks to Kane of Adam for this week's installment of the Vortracker Report. Now to the Democrats, where we have some fundraising numbers out. Joe Biden looking to fight back against his Me Too and getting some support in doing so. Beto's hanging out with Al Sharpton and much more. But first, we have some cracks starting to show as the DCCC tries to put the kibosh on the Coalition of the Ascendant, winning these primaries. So apparently there was a meeting with a closed door meeting between Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee Chair Sherry Bustos and progressive members, which apparently became heated as Bustos' liberal colleagues pressed her to reverse on a just announced rule barring Democratic consultants from working with primary challengers if they want to have business with the national campaign arm. Now, this is kind of a big deal because, you know, as we talked about with the sort of the dynamic of people trying to find qualified minority staffers who actually, you know what they're doing. You know, these people are sort of capital that, you know, the serious campaigns are looking to snap up, and you don't want to be at odds with the DCCC, who basically can make it so you're not working on any serious campaigns anymore. Progressive Caucus co-chairs Mark Pocan and Pramila Jayapal, along with Ro Khanna, requested the meeting with Bustos to explain why the new policy issued to consultants last week created a monopoly of DCCC sanctioned vendors and would blackball too many talented vendors and consultants. Bustos made clear that she would not change the policy, which he argues is crucial to protecting Democratic incumbents after last fall's huge gains in the House. Progressives erupted this week after DCCC announced the policy change aimed at deterring primary challengers. Critics see it as an attempt to suppress groups like Justice Democrats, which helped elect AOC and Ayanna Pressley, both of whom knocked out longtime Democratic incumbents.
Well, and now Ayanna Pressley has finally taken the tactic that is going to work a little bit better here. The narrative that this policy would disproportionately hurt women's and people of color, which it would, because those are the people that are going to be these extremely divisive and harmful, quote, people, end quote, of our party. And that's what they're trying to boycott. I mean, this is the kosher AOC sandwich.
She came out and said something similar, though not quite as explicit, saying primaries are often the only way that underrepresented and working class people are able to have a shot at pursuing elected office. She's not talking about you, working class white person.
The DCCC is going to start a war here. I mean, unless this policy is reversed, because it's these kinds of policies, both in the Republican Party and the Democrats are actually successful at infiltrating their own party here. These are the policies that have created things like Justice Democrats, whose goal it was to unseat 11 different establishment members of Congress. They didn't succeed except for AOC, but there were other efforts, as we've pointed out in this program before, that succeeded as well, like Ilhan and Rashida. And they're going to try to slam the door shut on that. The response is going to be this. What do they think was going to happen?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but AOC has come out and called for a halt to donations to the DCCC itself until the policy is lifted.
Nice.
She tweeted the @DCCC's new rule to blacklist and boycott anyone who does business with primary challengers is extremely divisive and harmful to the party. My recommendation, if you're a small dollar donor, pause your donations to the DCCC and give directly to swing candidates instead. And I remember this was a big thing on the GOP side prior to the arrival of Donald Trump. Everyone was like, you know, fuck the NRSC and these big party arm organizations. Just donate to who you like. That's the only thing that you can do. So yeah. They have sort of a similar dynamic going on over there now.
Yeah, I mean, I there are very few people that I would actually give money to, but there are a few on the GOP side that I would give money to. I would still support Steve King, even though he's had some missteps. I would still support. Well, I'm not going to start listing people's names because it's like painting fucking targets on their back. Steve King and others I would still give money to. But yeah, I think it's good. I mean, her AOC's response is you're going to boycott our vendors. All right, cool. Well, any small dollar donors, which is no small potatoes. I mean, these candidates are all being driven by small dollar donors. Pause your donations, which is tantamount to a boycott until the DCCC starts to get a shit together. But the DCCC won't do that because this is the golem that they created, right? I mean, they don't want 10 AOCs. We want 10 AOCs for different reasons, but they don't want 10 AOCs because they know what it means. The reason they don't want 10 AOCs is the reason I want 10 AOCs. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, we're all in agreement here, sort of in a manner of speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hakeem Jeffries, who is black, but who is also, you know, a member of leadership, you know, just like the Congressional Black Caucus, you know, these people being essentially bought and paid for. He came out and was like, look, we got to protect this majority.
Well, everybody knows that the Congressional Black Caucus is just bought and paid for by Shlomo at this point. I mean, Those guys are supposed to be the wokest on the Jews that are out there. They're not. They're the ones out there loudly condemning this stuff. And you know, in some they and they're given a pass when it causes too much trouble for the CBC. But like these are the Congressional Black Caucus candidates are just all bought and paid for. Like they're not going to come out there. You would think that the CBC would be the center of this takeover by non-whites of the Democratic Party. But no,
mm-mm.
No. You know, they don't get along with yeah. the other races, but you would think that they would be trying to bring in like other, you know, other like, you know, blacks. But no, the reason why they're not, because these people have gotten their majority minority districts carved out for them with gerrymandering. They've got their power. They've got their slush funds. They've got the corruption. They got the money that they're lining their pockets and the pockets of their supporters with. And that's all they want. And this is by design, too, because, I mean, you let blacks into government. I mean, you just keep them fucking, you know, keep the juice flowing and you're going to get what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. This next one is literally a colon report from Fox News, but it does have the potential to stir some shit up also. Yeah, Pelosi's office sought to sabotage Medicare for All push report. So apparently an advisor to Speaker Pelosi reportedly urged health policy groups to raise their concerns about Medicare for All proposals just as the plan was beginning to be embraced by 2020 presidential contenders. Politico reported that Wendell Primus, Pelosi's health policy advisor, I wonder what that individual looks like, told a private meeting of policy groups in November, at the end of November, that the push for the radical single payer system is diverting from the party's main health care message. According to Politico, Primus called Medicare for All an unhelpful distraction and expressed the need for more scrutiny of the policy implications. Someone who attended the meeting said it left them with the impression that Democratic leadership wanted them to undermine the proposal. It came across as, "We need this so we can get on with our agenda," one person present told Politico. "Can you help us point out the problems?" A Pelosi spokesman disputed that Primus was looking for a quote-unquote one-sided analysis of the proposal. Wendell absolutely did not ask for any kind of one-sided analysis of Medicare for All, and anyone who says otherwise wasn't actually listening, said spokesman Henry Connolly. "As Democrats across the entire spectrum, we believe in legislating based on facts, data, and honest analysis." Premier Jayapal, again, who had introduced her own Medicare for All bill in the House, told Politico that if true, the remarks were disappointing. "I will take it up with our leadership to make sure we're not undermining members' bills," she said.
Oh, man.
So, I don't know. That was just one more thing that I saw that looks like it could cause a potential dust up over there. There's so many of those things at this point.
Yeah, the rifts just keep on coming. And I saw that there was another FEC complaint filed against AOC yesterday. I mean, that was something that we had talked about a while ago about Justice Dems and being run by Precot, whatever the Indian who is running. Her.
Oh, yeah. I don't even remember that guy's name.
Yeah. But I mean, they essentially he was running her campaign and the super PAC that was promoting her at the same time. Totally illegal. But yeah, because
their names were actually on like these packs, which is like,
oh yeah, there's no coordination.
It's sort of like your 3-day course to running a pack, you know, by fucking Grover Norquist or whatever. That's covered in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. And of course, if these were establishment Dems or people that were, you know, comfortably in the center of the kosher sandwich, nothing would happen to them. They could commit all manner of illegality. Look at Hillary Clinton. She's the epitome of the kosher sandwich. But Hillary Clinton wouldn't get in trouble, hasn't gotten in trouble. Lock her up was fake and gay and never going to happen. But someone like AOC, who's causing a problem, who's calling for boycotts, the DCCC, this is a lever. These FEC complaints against her involvement with Precot, shit cat, whatever his name is a lever that they're going to try to apply. And it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny. AOC goes out and calls for a boycott of the DCCC. And then all of a sudden there's another FEC complaint filed. I wonder what's going on. Interesting timing there, Shlomo.
Yes. Yes, it definitely is kind of funny. So you want to get into the candidates now?
Yeah, well, Biden has not been having a very good week. We talked a little bit about this on Sunday. At that point, there was just that Wammon Flores, who is this? This is the hair sniff. She had her hair snipped by Joe Biden. Deep breath made her feel like, you know, the world was coming to an end. And then the second Me Too, I think, came after we had our show on Sunday. So then the whole thing has just been off to the races ever since.
Yeah. The first one was sort of interesting. That actually took place at a Latino victory event. have you seen this woman, dude?
Is she every bit as Guatemalan as I imagine her in my mind?
That's not how I'd describe her. I mean, she's definitely very Hispanic looking, but it's like how it takes horse face to a whole new level. Like, her face is not disfigured, and there's actually really nothing, no issues with her complexion, you know, aside from the shade of her skin. And but dude, it's just like, oosh, wow. So yeah, I mean, halfway after I watched, I guess that I watched a good portion of Meet the Press and then sort of surfed around to the other Sunday shows and, you know, all the deluge of articles that come out, you know, late Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon. And things were definitely not looking good for Joe. But, you know, he has picked up some defenders in the meantime. There also have been people, obviously, the 2020 candidates. But what was interesting to me is the organizer of this Latino victory event. He said, I have thoroughly reviewed photographic documentation from the event and spoken to nearly every principal in attendance, as well as staff associated with the event. To the best of our recollection, at no time were Lucy Flores and Vice President Biden alone. Henry Munoz, co-founder of Latino Victory Project, said in a statement. Of course, this allegedly took place while they were both sort of, you know, off stage waiting to go on. I think she even said there was another person there. But like, you know, this is something you could sort of get away with on the sly. And it's also, you know, Joe Biden has no issues of doing shit like this, you know, with 20 cameras rolling.
Well, he's been doing this for years, and one of our listeners sent me a video of Jeff Sessions waving Biden's hand away from touching a little girl. It must have been after State of the Union, and he said this is the most it's almost criminal that this video is not more widely disseminated. And yeah, it's a video essentially, and it's a video that I've seen as it slows down the interaction too, and it's basically Biden.
Are they both in the?
Go ahead.
Are they both in the Senate at this point, I guess?
Yeah, it was after it might have been after a State of the Union speech, because it looked like there were guests and people on the floor. And Biden was standing sort of at the top of the rostrum and staring off into space. And Sessions was talking to a little girl. And it was in that moment you see Biden notice the little girl and like lean in and like put his hand on her shoulder. And he's about like to whisper something in her ear. And you can see Sessions brushing his hand off of the little girl's shoulder and then continuing to shoo Biden like a fly as he physically turns this little girl and walks her away from Biden. And you can see, because they slow it down in the video, you can see the look that Sessions gives to Biden. And it's just like, stay the fuck away, man. And it's like, just,
oh, Jefferson Beauregard, why did you have to recuse yourself?
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah. Well, and this is the thing, is that Biden is well known for this. And this is the thing I was sort of wondering out loud about on FTN on Sunday, is maybe this is why he hasn't officially announced yet. That's true, right? I haven't missed a story, right? He hasn't officially announced.
No, he still has yet to officially announce.
So this is like a giant test balloon that is getting holes poked in it by the Coalition of the Ascendant and Whammons, like as we speak, and is just like losing altitude. And it's not even official.
Yeah. I mean, although he is picking up defenders, you know, sort of left and right. Like I said, I was feeling very, it was looking midway through the day on Sunday like it might be curtains, but there has been a shift. All of his defenders, though, you know, I don't, you know, Kellyanne Conway actually made a decent point. It's like there's so much of this stuff out there. Like, I don't see how it's ever fully addressed and like ever actually goes away.
It doesn't,
you know,
it
just that's sort of an obvious talking point.
The other thing is with like Biden is he's their meal ticket. Bernie's not going to deliver a Trump defeat. Kamala is sort of a backup plan, but a tenuous one. Beto is sort of a backup plan, but a tenuous one. Biden is the one that is popular, that is soaring in the polls. And of course, they have real, like, they can't allow the Me Too to come in. Now, they saved Ralph Northam and Justin Fairfax and Mark Herring, all from certain death, political death. And they'll probably attempt to do that with Biden. But like you just said, There aren't videos of the 2020
contenders.
There aren't videos of Ralph Northam walking around in blackface like that are going to keep on surfacing like that. But with Biden, it's like literally like it's just a never ending stream of this shit.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I've been dipping into the comments on a lot of these articles and, you know, his. Of course, the grug brain of his defenders are, you know, the first thing that they go to is grab him by the pussy. It's like, yeah, but there's an actual complainant here. So the situation is immediately kind of very different, you know, whatever the veracity. Anyway, his fellow 2020 contenders, to the extent that they've really said anything about it, I don't think anyone has really come out. They, you know, they just say, I believe Flores and Warren. I think this was it was first that I saw. This was, I think, maybe late Saturday night that she was out there.
I wanted to see if you had a chance to read more into it, either last night or this morning, if you had an additional response to add.
So I did. I read the op-ed last night, I believe, Lucy Flores. And Joe Biden needs to give an answer.
Should he not run as a result?
That's for Joe Biden to decide.
So obviously you have the self-interested 2020 contenders, but beyond that, it's sort of a mixed bag, breaking down sort of more with the old guard and others. Dick Durbin, one allegation of sexual misconduct, shouldn't disqualify Biden. Feinstein.
Dude, Feinstein, he is a warm, tactile person. That's a nice way of putting it. Right. Was Brett Kavanaugh a warm, tactile person? No, he wasn't, right?
Yeah. Well, there's so many. I mean, the double standard is so, I mean, the juxtapositions, but that's, you know, I'll leave that to.
Nobody gives a shit about that. Nobody gives a shit about that.
Yeah. I'll leave that to you know, Red State and their important work. Pelosi, you know, she comes out, and says Biden needs to respect people's personal space. She came out and said I'm a member of the straight arm club. Just pretend you have a cold and I have a cold. He's an affectionate person to children, to senior citizens, to everyone. But that's just not the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's all the usual suspects. Pelosi, Feinstein, Durbin. Who else is out there defending him? Quite a few.
In the media, in the media, this was here you go.
Yeah, I mean, Karen Tumulty makes a really good point when she says Joe needs to knock it out. If he does, campaign, new day.
Yeah.
New campaign trail, new reality. What's that?
I think that's sad. I think the next time I see Joe Biden, if he doesn't hug me and give me a kiss and hold my hand while we're talking to you, that's a new Joe Biden. And that's not the Joe Biden I knew. He's a nice guy. He's not a predator. And this is ridiculous. Let me just say it. This is ridiculous. It's completely, the whole thing has gotten, the conversation has gotten out of control. And Democrats and those on the left who want to tweet me today and go nuts and get all woke, you're eating your young, you're eating those who can beat Trump, you're killing the very people who have been pushing women ahead, who have been fighting for equal pay, who have been doing everything they can to respect women and their lives. And we're going to go after Joe Biden for being affectionate to women of all ages, to men as well. This is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I don't understand it.
All right. Still ahead.
Oh, my God. Yeah. If Joe Biden doesn't give me give Mika a big bite of his old 3-foot salami, like it's a different Joe Biden.
Yeah. It's like if he doesn't walk up and grab me by the pussy, I'm not going to be disappointed.
Yeah. Oh, she will be disappointed. She's going to be disappointed if she doesn't get grabbed by the pussy. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the levels of cognitive dissonance with these people.
Yeah, just, well, and then apparently they got into it on The View also. I guess Meghan McCain got in the mix, but I don't know if she's
nobody's grabbing clip. Her by the pussy. You're getting a little bit of stomach and thigh in there probably too.
Yeah, it's probably very hot down there.
Inferno.
President of the United States do that to me so unexpectedly and just kind of out of nowhere. It was just shocking. The reason why we're having these conversations about Vice President Joe Biden is because he's considering running for president.
So now Biden responded that in all his years on the campaign trail, he does never believe he's acted inappropriately. So he'll listen respectfully to Flores, but it was never his intention. Now, should she have spoken to him about this before she went on television about it? Or, I mean, is it, you know, listen, in the old days, we would call Joe, some folks of a certain age would say he's a little overly familiar.
Yeah.
Okay. But most politicians, when they're, you know, doing this with you, and, you know, they are. And Joe is a hands-on kind of guy.
Yeah, he
is. But no one, I've never heard anyone, and she says she felt violated, and I have to take her at her word, but it would have been nice if she had turned him and said, you know what, Jay, I don't really like this. Please don't do this. Or not, Mr. Vice President, I'm not really comfortable with that. Something, because he's standing right there.
No, it's hard to say to somebody who's sniffing your hair.
No, it's not.
Hair.
Somebody touches you inappropriately.
But it wasn't. That's the point.
Can we just say she does not say it rises to the level of sexual assault or anything of that nature. She does not claim this is a Me Too moment. So I think we need to be very clear on that, because I think some people are interpreting it that way.
Well, and let's also be clear.
But that's the point. Mm-hmm. That's the point, is to get people to think about it like that. Mm-hmm. It does not rise to any of those things.
No, it's a long way from smelling your hair to grabbing your hoo-ha. I mean, let's tell the truth.
Oh man, Whoopi Goldberg has no problem being crass and abrasive. Imagine my shock. Oh man.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, NPR was out, you know, they rehashed all these points about, you know, Biden's liabilities and blah blah blah, but the interesting thing where they basically in essence validated the FTN theory of the 2016 election. Such contrition may help Biden mend some fences, but adjusting his aura of attachment to the past is a trickier proposition, because perception of Biden as old school or old fashioned are not just liabilities to be shed. They are also the basis of his appeal to many older white working class Democrats and independents. No one should forget that the failure to connect with many of these voters drove Hillary Clinton's share of the overall white vote down to 37% and cost her the election. No one expects Biden to win back a majority of the white vote for his party, but getting back above 40% would put him with 2008 Barack Obama and 1990s Bill Clinton, and probably into the White House.
Well,
and that's what happened in Hillary Clinton. Just the there was math that had been worked out on this, and what was acceptable, a certain amount had to be factored in, but she just ended up losing too many whites too fast.
Well, and Joe may benefit from the fact that Donald Trump isn't delivering on many of his promises, because if whites just stay home, because Biden is detestable, but they're also not turning out for Trump, that's going to benefit Biden. Biden does, like, the bigger that Donald Trump fails, the less difficult it is for Biden to have to go out and fight for these white working class voters. So in essence, by following the Jared Kushner model and allowing Jared Kushner to do all this kind of Jewish shit to the White House, it's making Biden's pathway to the presidency easier. It seems kind of basic, but this is why, because the Biden doesn't have to work as hard. Well, Biden has to straddle this wide gap between white working class voters still in the Democratic Party, Midwestern voters, and this coalition of the ascendant. And he has to strike this balance between not being too anti-white and also not being too old school and establishment. It's a difficult task, but Donald would make that even more difficult for him if Donald was doing what Donald needs to do. But if people are looking for just, you know, a pathway out of having to support evil, racist, orange Blormth, Biden might not be from the superficial level. We know differently, but, you know, average Midwestern voters don't.
Yeah. If Trump is just going to bitch up and do the, you know, we're running against socialism in 2020. Then he needs Biden to win that primary, because for that plan to work, the top of the Democratic ticket needs to be someone that whites will turn out against specifically.
Right. Exactly. Well, and that's what they're betting on. Right. They want a lot of this defense of Biden is coming out to try to shore up who they think is their best bet at beating Trump. It is Biden.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, these people, you know, rushing in to defend Joe Biden, it's like you're signing up to be a Biden defender. It's like, yo, this is going to be like a fucking potentially a weekly obligation you're signing up here for. You realize that, right?
It kind of is. I see you had some drop from Tina Brown. What's this all about? She said, I suspect time is up for Joe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Tina Brown was the one big sort of media figure on the left who you know, came out saying the opposite. And Tina Brown, a lot of our listeners probably don't know who she is, but she is definitely an opinion maker on the left. As a matter of fact, I'm sure she's been on Morning Joe quite a bit, and I think she works for. She's sort of an integral figure, or was at Salon or the Daily Beast or one of those places.
He didn't do well at all with Anita Hill. And actually, he blew the opportunity during the cabinet hearings, I think, to make that his moment where he did his whole kind of mea culpa and said, I so got that wrong. I so apologize, and actually call her and do so, which he never did. So he's got that issue to deal with. A lot of issues to deal with. I suspect it does mean, because there is a reason why this movement after Me Too is called Time's Up. There is a reason why he shouldn't run, really, which is that it's not about this that he shouldn't run, but because he's not nimble in the mores and the language of today. I think he's going to spend a lot of this campaign apologizing for all kinds of things that he did or didn't do, things that he, you know, baggage from the past. I think he's an amazing, noble guy in many, many ways. But I suspect that time is up for Joe Biden.
Well, Don Lemon agrees. Don Lemon says that it's definitely reaching its peak now, the official Democrats apology tour. But he has to do this whole, like, don't get me wrong, nobody should be touching anybody inappropriately, blah, 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 blah. But essentially that if Democrats spend all this time on an apology tour, that they're going to hand the White House to Donald Trump. But the problem is that the base is the Democratic base is demanding. Well, I don't know. That's the thing. It's like instinctually, I want to say they're demanding this. So the media is delivering. But are they really demanding it? I think would they just be OK with Biden just being like, fuck it? Or would there be I guess there are enough pundits with platforms on the left, on the non-establishment side, who can come out and call Biden out. And so he has to do this or else they will. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, and it's going to be a lot of white Democrats, you know, a lot of these people who are, you know, even probably more stridently and ardently against Trump than some of these, these non-whites. You know, these people are all about it, and they're going to be like, no, you know, you guys are fucking this up. It's all going over the top, and this is our chance to beat Trump, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the whole thing, there's a lot of dynamics at play here, and it's definitely going to get very delicious. And speaking of delicious dynamics.
Hold on a second. I think what actually Don Lemon is calling for is someone who doesn't have to do an apology tour. One of these non-whites, one of these people who hasn't been in politics. I mean, that's the key, right? Someone who doesn't have to do an apology tour is not a white person. And the apology tour is the thing that you have to engage in if you're a white person who is still trying to figure out how to become a powerful figure, namely the president, in a Browning Democratic Party. But if you're not one of those things, you don't have to do an apology tour. You can just show up and attack Whitey and things are good. That's what I mean. That's what we want, too. We want this shit to be as fucking as wild as possible, right? As divisive as possible. It's not going to be divisive with an apology tour. I mean, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead and finish and then I'll.
I was just going to say, like, but I mean, it does rustle people to hear Biden go out and say, you know, white man's culture must be destroyed and shit like that. But
yeah,
when it's coming from a white person, though, that sometimes has the opposite effect on other whites. When it's being said by a Congress bulb,
yeah,
it's better.
Well, that's yeah, it might be coming from Joe Biden, but it's not just coming from white people anymore. And that was sort of the issue that I was pointing out last week. You know, Biden's in sort of a catch-22 here. His primary utility, you know, to the 2020 Democrats and why he's polling so well and being talked about so much is, you know, his ability to, you know, put all these white voters in play. But every time he has to, you know, go in front of a crowd of POC and genuflect and, you know, talk about how, you know, rape culture is the white man's invention. And, you know, we need to have an unlimited stream of immigration and the GOP is going to put y'all back in chains and all this bullshit. Every time that diminishes that utility, you know, a little bit. And I think you end up would have a cumulative effect if, you know, certain media players on the right did their job correctly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much hay to be made from this, but most of the media pundits are just sitting there with their fucking dick in their hand. I mean, Tucker and Lou Dobbs are really the only people that are getting into this stuff. And they don't even really get too much into the cultural stuff. They do a little bit, but there's a lot more that could be done, a lot more that could be said, a lot more that could be pushed back on. But Don Lemon has no problem doing it. We need Don Lemon counterparts. Lots of them out there. And that's not, you know, that's not a slight against Tucker. Tucker does a great job. We just need 100 Tuckers and all of them specializing in various aspects of the zeitgeist and pushing it back in the direction that we want it to go in. So that's Joe Biden. I suspect that there will be enough defense from the establishment that comes up, as well as a media unwillingness to report on these things. You notice how they, after it was clear that Ralph Northam and Fairfax and Herring weren't going anywhere, that shit just got memory hold. And the whole apparatus, there were impeachment hearings that were scheduled that got canceled. They'll do the same for Joe because he's the big ticket. He's the thing that they can use to defeat Trump. He's got the money. He's got the power. He's got the name ID. They don't want to take a big risk on some non-white who may come out and be like, fuck Jews, though.
No, they do not. You want to hit Beto?
Yeah, let's do that.
Well, yeah, you were talking about, is the base really demanding it? And you know, I don't know, but certainly Al Sharpton is demanding it. I mean, he's having his big shindig with the National Action Network this week, and basically all of the 2020 primary contenders are going to be stopping by to kiss the ring and attempt to get Al Sharpton's blessing. The 4-day convention, which begins in New York officially on Wednesday, includes Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Kristen Gillibrand, Amy Klobuchar, among its speakers, former Representative O'Rourke and Mayor Pete, John Hickenlooper, and Julian Castro will also be appearing. Former Vice President Joe Biden, who is not scheduled to appear at the convention, spoke at a Martin Luther King Day event in Washington organized by Sharpton. Sort of setting the tone, being interviewed about the his whole little deal here. Asked what he wanted to hear from the candidates at the convention, Sharpton told The Hill, "I want to hear substance. I don't want to hear sound bites. Like, yes, we need to alter the criminal justice system. How? What would you do about the mandatory sentencing laws? What would you do about police reform? Would you reinstitute consent decrees? Addressing persistent economic inequality is also important, he said. I want to hear in terms of the economy. How do you close the race gap in employment? Yes, black unemployment is lower than it's ever been, but it's still double that of whites. Oh, there you go. You got a fucking hat tip from Al Sharpton, Donald Trump.
I appreciate I appreciate you reading Al Sharpton as opposed to playing Al Sharpton. Because I just like that's the most Al Sharpton stream of consciousness like I've ever gotten in such a short period of time. Usually it's like we have to get the National Action Network into the streets to get this. I mean, there are very few people that you can listen to on quadruple speed. He's one of them. We were talking about this the other day. People that you can listen to on double speed successfully. Rush Limbaugh, you can listen to on double speed because he speaks so slow. Al Sharpton, you can do quadruple speed, 400%. And he's basically like speaking at a normal cadence at that point. But like, listen to him on MSNBC. Oh, my God, dude. It's just so bad.
That's Politics not Nation.
Yeah. Politics Nation. Where's the teleprompter? Where did it go? It's just, dude, he's so fucking slow. It's so slow, even with the teleprompter. Well, the teleprompter and him reading is the problem. He'd probably be faster if he didn't have a teleprompter, but then God knows what he would fucking say.
So, even though it officially starts tomorrow, I guess there was some sort of warm-up act, which Beto was a part of, and here he is responding to questions about first and foremost reparations, but then also things like consent decrees, like the Reverend said.
A commission to study reparations.
Oh, no.
If that passes and you are president of the United States, would you sign that bill?
Yes. And I appreciate the woman who asked me to say yes or no. I had a chance to speak with and just listen to and learn from Brian Stevenson in Montgomery, Alabama, and learn from his work on working with the community to build a memorial to justice and to peace. And he said foundational to reparations is the word repair. Foundational to repair is the truth. And until all Americans understand that civil rights are not just those victories that I began with at the outset of my comments, but the injustices that have been visited and continue to be visited on people, we will never get the change that we need to live up to the promise of this country. So absolutely, I would.
Not bad, Beto. Name drop some semi-obscure civil rights person and then just fire off a string of platitudes.
Live up to the chain. Live up to the change that is the promise of this country. What the fuck does that mean? I mean, I know what it means. All white people dead, disappeared, gone, wealth transfer complete.
Yeah. As a practical matter, but as a string of words, it means precisely dick.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Oh, my God. Yeah. Beto.
Yeah. Cool. And then here is with the consent decrees.
You became president. Would you bring back the option of the Justice Department coming in with consent decrees in those cities that it was required or necessary?
The answer to this one is also yes. And I really appreciate the way that you frame this question, Reverend Sharpton, because we support our police officers and our sheriff's deputies. We know that they have an incredibly difficult job. And as I attempted to make the case earlier, they are one part of a larger system, not just of criminal justice in this country, but a system that has successfully suppressed some Americans based on their race for as long as we have been a country.
Yeah. So, there you go. It's like you got to understand, it's not just the cops that are oppressing you. It's all white people.
Yeah, everybody. And Joe Biden threw a hat in the ring with that white man's culture. We got to tear it all down. I'm so sorry for all this. So, yeah, the apology tour continues. Beto is brushing up. I don't know. I feel like Beto has more like non-white bona fides now than Kamala. I mean, Kamala had tried very hard to do it. She's, and she's been sort of rejected by non-whites. But Beto is starting to brush up on that. I mean, he's going to need it if he's going to be the running mate of Kamala. One of them's got to start doing this.
Yeah.
But Biden's not really articulate enough to do it.
Yeah, the first real news I've seen from her is, I guess she came out. She was the last one, to comment on this Biden issue. And she basically said that, it was a milquetoast nothing statement about how I believe Flores or, whatever the fuck.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, we
didn't talk about that.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, some of them have been pretty silent for the past couple weeks, but they all have sort of had some sort of news this week because of fundraising, which we sort of touched on. But I mean, Sanders is in the lead, right? Did he raise more than Biden? I mean, Biden is not even officially doesn't have a campaign. So it's only the people who raised money in the first quarter who have an official campaign to show that they raised money for, right?
Yeah, as far as quarterly numbers, I think that Sanders is probably in the lead, although the article outlines that there was some extra cash he just had, laying around from previous efforts that ended up being part of that total. But Beto did actually eclipse his one day total, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, I saw that.
Boyne raised $6 million, and then Beto managed to raise a little bit more.
Nice. Yeah, I saw Butt Geig had $7 million in the first quarter. Kabbalah Haaretz had 12. But yeah, Bernie was, I guess, padding his money with other money that he already had on hand. So who else?
So it did say the fundraising total announced by Sanders campaign Tuesday surpasses the amount he raised in the first months of his 2016 presidential bid. That year, he reported bringing in $15.2 million from April 30th, the day that he launched his campaign, to June 30th. But this is good, though. If you're this is going to guarantee, I mean, the level of support that he has, but also money, is going to guarantee that Sanders is around, going to be around to the end, regardless of how bitter this gets because of all the other shit.
Well, that's one of the things that the establishment Democrats have lamented about. Well, I think it I don't remember who it was that said this, but they essentially made the case that Bernie will be in the primary and be a problem for us long after he is done being viable as a candidate. So he can stick around essentially forever. And because of these donation requirements for the debates, he can participate in all the debates. The only thing they can do is just have fewer debates or make the requirements more stringent as time goes on. But they're gonna have a hard time doing that because they fucked him once. Anything that they do to try to box him out of this thing is going to be viewed as correctly trying to fuck him twice. Dude,
it would be explosive.
Yes. So,
as long as we're still talking at least about Bernie, we forgot that Axios article. Apparently there are Joe Biden advisors who think that there's a bit of a conspiracy afoot, and they are trying to link this to the Biden or the Sanders campaign. I assume they're talking about Flores. I mean, there's not a whole lot to go on here or any rationale for them thinking this, but they probably have a decent reasoning for doing so. And then the article of this Axios piece, who is all these Axios guys are swamp creatures. So I have no reason to believe that he's, did not get this text message. Vice President directed staff this evening to reach out to supporters and donors with a simple message: full steam ahead. So if he thinks that this is somebody like Boyne trying to fuck him before he's even in, as opposed to, Lucy Flores being, legitimately aggrieved by his conduct or whatever. That's you're going to look at things a little differently and probably just be pissed about it.
Yeah, well, I saw Yang didn't quite get the bag that he wanted. But what is 1.7? What is 1.7 million? Is that 17,000 yangs he raised in the first quarter? I think that's how that works.
Yes, it is.
All right, good. Yeah. Did I do the math right on that? Right on the fly? It is. Oh, no, it's 1700 yangs. 1700 yangs in the first quarter he has raised. $1.7 million. Yang's not off to a bad start. He's got to raise some more yangs, but it's not bad. It's not bad. It would be, I mean, if their goal was really to destroy the Democratic establishment, though, the best, if I were advising them right now, it would be for all of these people to get behind Bernie. And the whole apparatus, all of it. But they're sort of like out there as their own satellites, trying to attack this thing. But if they all united against Biden, or they united against, you know, some of the other they would be a formidable force. This would turn there's also an interest in Democrats not becoming a fucking outright civil war. But I don't know. Just looking at this objectively, I could be wrong.
No, it's things are definitely going to get very, very dicey. Bernie Sanders, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, Mayor Buttplug, Mayor Pete, I think, is sort of the meme now these days. Continuing with his sort of ascendancy, you mentioned his fundraising numbers. He also tops. So according to Axios, citing data compiled by NewsWhip, a social media analytics company, Mayor Pete's Twitter following has grown by 447,000 followers since his CNN town hall in March. Former Representative O'Rourke had the second biggest jump, adding 137,000. He also saw more engagement on his Twitter account than any of his other potential 2020 competitors during the same period, except O'Rourke, whose following is twice as large. He also has added 90,000 followers to his Instagram account and 75,000 followers to his Facebook since said town hall, which was March 10th. In the past week alone, Biden has seen a 100% increase in search interest, while Buttigieg saw a spike of 35%. Yeah, but I think Biden's is probably largely unwanted.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, this thing's going to continue. You got anything else for Democrats, or you want to get the fuck out of here?
Yeah, nah. Yeah, that's enough for now. I mean, these people are going to be... It's gonna be a boon. Business is gonna be very good.
Yep. So keep our eye on this and many other things. But don't hold your breath on a border closure. It ain't happening. We'll catch you guys on Sunday for part two of Kushner Inc. and any other news that's fit to talk about on FTN. We'll catch you guys later.